This episode of The Tour Life is also brought to you by Optimize Touring. If you're interested in learning how you can bring health and wellness on tour with you, whether it's a small van tour or a huge arena tour, go to optimizetouring.com to learn more. Welcome to The Tour Life podcast from Well Better Best. I'm Janine, your host, integrative nutrition health coach and personal trainer. In the past 10 years, I've had the privilege of meeting some of the most interesting and hardworking professionals in the music industry. Whether you are a fan of live music or someone who actually puts on the shows, you'll find some great stories, advice, and encouragement to live a happier, healthier life doing what you love. Today's guest is a tour manager who has worked with artists such as Fever Ray, Robin, Royksopp, M83, and The Knife. She won the 2020 Women in Live Music Tour Manager of the Year Award, has been a frequent panelist throughout the pandemic, and sits on the committee of the Tour Production Group. In 2021, she launched the nonprofit Backstage Pass, aimed at improving diversity and inclusion in the Dutch live music industry. In this episode, she shares how putting on shows as a teenager led her to pursuing a music management degree and into concert touring. We also discuss why it's super important to look after your mental health when filling your calendar, the role that diversity and inclusion plays in the touring world, and how keeping in touch with new friends can help you give and receive professional opportunities in the future. You can find her on Instagram at LachaTM. Here is my conversation with Lacha Horvers. It's so nice to have you on the show. I'm so excited to chat. How are you?
Thanks, Janine. Thanks so much for having me. I'm good. Thank you. It's been a tumultuous week, but I'm good now.
Yeah, things are really starting to get busy again, right?
Yeah, and it's so strange to be working again that I'm like, right, okay, how did I do this again? Okay, boom, 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 boom. And suddenly feeling slightly overwhelmed, but now getting in the rhythm of things.
Yeah, even just like being able to go out in public is really strange.
Yeah, it's in the Netherlands, it's only just been maybe a week or so that we're having events at large scale again. So I just did my first shift at the Melkweg in Amsterdam, where I work sometimes as a production manager. A week ago, and it was really weird to be there again.
I remember the first show because I went like the summer. I went to it was just like a local show, but it was outdoors, and it was just so weird to stand there and then just like be able to like hear the different conversations going around.
Yeah,
like that was just such a weird experience because I hadn't
just overhearing that, strangers.
Yeah, like I just hadn't like had that happen in so long. That's so awesome. Well, so let's get started because we talked a few months ago, but I definitely want to hear more about your story. You won an award this year for Tour Manager of the Year, and you've been doing so many cool things. So let's take it back and kind of see how you even got started in the industry. Did you know it was something you wanted to do when you were young? Younger.
I realized at a pretty early age that this is where I wanted to go. As a teenager, I was into, you know, it was mid-90s. I was into grunge and rock and metal music. But I lived in a really small town in the south of the Netherlands where there weren't really any shows happening. And all I wanted was to go to shows. And so I had heard that a couple years before I went to high school, there had once been a festival organized at my festival, a rock festival at my school. And I was like, I got to make that happen. Like, why isn't that festival happening anymore? So I went to the dean and I asked, could we have that festival back? And he actually said, you know, if you want to have a festival, then you should organize it. And if you're going to have a rock festival, then you also need to organize other events that have, you know, for people that like different or other kind of music. So I grabbed a friend and the two of us put together a committee, and we organized this rock festival together with, I guess, some teachers, having never done anything of the sort. But yeah, you just learn by doing it. And they gave us a budget, and we booked 5 local bands, and we booked a PA and a lighting rig and a bar. At the time, the drinking age in the Netherlands was 16. So we had alcohol in this high school festival. And we had to make the posters, and we had to sell the tickets in our you know, school breaks. I was selling tickets. And on the day, I was the artist liaison, not knowing what that was, but just, you know, we had a team who cooked the dinner for everybody whatever that subject's called, in the classroom where you have all the stoves. And
yeah, home ec, right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and yeah. So, yeah, and it just, the whole day was amazing. It was just like the lighting came in and the audio came in. Everyone's building everything. The bands came in, they sound checked, and it was all coming together. And I think about maybe 300 or 400 people were there. Not a ton, but it was a small high school. And it was in you call it aula in Dutch. It's not like an auditorium, but it's just the main hall of the school where you have all the
like
gatherings.
The commons is what we call it here.
Right.
Thank you.
And as the evening was on, and I was on kind of the balcony looking down at the audience and the bands happening, and I was like, this is the best feeling I've ever had. This is what I want to do. And for the couple of years I was in high school after that, I organized more events. And then together with that same friend, we organized our own events in a local space that we rented, where we had sometimes local bands and sometimes just a DJ playing rock music, and we'd sell tickets to that. And that's how I made a little extra cash as a high schooler. And then when I finished high school, I heard about this college called Music Management. And so that's where I went, because I was set on learning how to organize these events, but at a larger scale and more professionally. And then pretty quickly, when I was in school, we had a guest lecturer who was a tour manager. And I was like, okay, that's what I want to do. Yeah, for sure. I wanted to be a tour manager once I heard about that. So I found some local bands that were just doing shows around the Netherlands, and I just help them out, drive and sell merch and set up gear. And just, that's where I started.
That's so neat. You know, having an opportunity when you're super young and like just, because they basically just told you to figure it out, right? Figure it out.
Yeah. Because it's not like those teachers knew how to put on a festival. They were just kind of, okay, well, you make a plan and we'll go step by step.
Well, I think that's the best kind of experience, right? And I think a lot of people in the industry specifically definitely, you know, fall into some sort of situation like that, where like they just have to figure it out. Mm-hmm. And then it, you know, makes you resourceful, and it definitely allows for people who are resourceful and who can figure things out to like funnel into it.
Yeah. I mean, in a sense, that's still what tour managing is. It just got thrown a bunch of information. You just figure it out.
Tell me, when you started touring, like, because, you know, you went to school, you knew that that's what you wanted to do. And then when you got your first opportunity, what was that like?
My first opportunity was, out of that school, I followed an internship. So I worked at the agency group for 6 months as an intern, kind of receptionist agent assistant. And I was advancing the tours for that agent. And they knew that I really wanted to be a tour manager. I wanted to tour manage after my internship. So I asked her, oh, you know, I see this band hasn't got a tour manager yet. Do you think I could do it? Because it'd be right after my internship was done. And she's like, well, why don't you ask them? And I mean, I didn't know she put in a good word for me, but she's like, here's the phone number. So I called them and introduced myself and asked if I could be the tour manager. And they're like, oh, we'll think about it. And yeah, I was so nervous, but they hired me and they were just super nice. It was a really interesting tour because it was a solo artist who was quite well known out of like a band, and it was a solo project, and he had hired all these musicians and some crew, and it wasn't an existing band that I kind of rolled into. It was, everyone didn't know each other before the tour, so we all kind of grew together, where sometimes when you roll into an existing camp it could be a little bit challenging, but here everyone was new, so everyone was just getting to know each other. And it was a six-week tour, but mostly around the Netherlands. So we would just would go home at night instead of traveling around. But it was still, it was everything I'd hoped it would be. I had the best time. And I remember calling my mom in the middle of it and be like, this is exactly what I want to be doing. This is so much fun. I'm having such a good time. Yeah, I fell in love with it from day one.
That's really cool. It's nice to hear that you were like, it was everything that you had the experience and you were like, this is it. Like, yeah. I found it. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had maybe had built it up in my head of what it was going to be like. And then I was exactly like I'd hoped it would be. It's really great.
It didn't disappoint, right?
No, exactly. I mean, you know, there was hard parts too. And, you know, even though I took a music management degree, I didn't know what a day sheet was, or what, like, someone had to tell me on that tour, like, hey, it would be great if you could just write down all the times of everything and hang it up in the dressing room. And I'm like, oh, great idea. Okay. So yeah, we just printed out a template, like 50 times of a template. And then I just threw the Sharpie, fill out the times, because I didn't have a laptop or a portable printer at that time. So it's pretty just, worked off a notebook, paper notebook.
Wow. Yeah. So it's so cool to hear this story, because I feel like a lot of people who fall into it kind of like just, you know, helping out a friend or something, right? Like they may not actually know anybody who does the job, mm-hmm. or may not have like a mentor to like really help them and like tell them, you know, like, this is how we do it, whatever. And yeah, you know, that experience, like, I think does happen a lot with people where like, you know, especially, you know, with you, where everybody was new, which was nice. So I think was there a little bit extra understanding?
Yeah. Well, a couple of the crew guys were new in the group, but they weren't new to touring. So they were kind of sometimes nice, sometimes not so nice about stuff that I didn't know. But, you know, you just have to learn it. And over the years, it was always, you learn just by doing it and putting it together, and sometimes you learn it because someone explains it to you. And it was a couple of years before I found a mentor that you know, that who I could call with questions about whatever, if it's visa applications or where do I get a bus in America, or I, you know, you could have, there's so many things that you need to know, and if it's the first time, you just have to figure them out from somewhere.
Yeah. And you know, I think for us when we're young and we're getting into opportunities, it can be really easy to get down on yourself about the things that you don't know. So how did you handle those situations when you were like, oh, this guy's like really annoyed with me because I don't know about this?
I would be pretty hard on myself, and I would doubt myself. Did I choose the right profession? But over time, I became more confident, and I'd be like, whatever, I know better than this person. So there, yeah. And to this day, you know, sometimes you get told off by people like, oh, if you were professional, you'd blah, blah, blah. And then I'd be like, no, I am a professional and this is how I do it.
Yeah, you grow that thick skin, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely something that happens with time, and you become more confident, right? And just in your abilities. And so things don't.
Absolutely. Because also on that first tour, that same Brody who taught me about a day sheet, what told me like, you're not enough of an asshole to be a tour manager. Like, you shouldn't be a tour manager. And yeah, I was like, whoa, should I be more of an asshole? How do I make myself more of an asshole? But I'm still not an asshole. I'm still here doing it.
That's funny though, because, right, it's like there's these preconceived notions about like what it takes to do a job. And sometimes when you're in it and you're like, well, I don't necessarily think that like it has to be that way.
No, in fact, I think being an asshole makes you a worse tour manager. And, you know, it doesn't mean that I get, you know, let myself get taken advantage of or get the runaround or anything. I know how it's supposed to be done. I'm just nice about it. And because then everyone has a much better day. And then I feel like a lot of the time, killing with kindness totally works.
Yeah, that's so true. And I think, you know, a lot of the people that I've talked to, I personally don't think are assholes. So, you know, like they come off as like, and I mean, you know, you can be dry. Like I have come across, I know some TMs that are, you know, pretty dry in their delivery of what they're, you know, trying to say or whatever. But there is a very fine line. And what I've noticed, especially about the more veteran tour managers, is that even if they had a moment or like years where they were assholes, they kind of softened it up. And it did come with experience, because it's like once you are confident, right, like maybe you don't necessarily feel like you need to be such an asshole anymore.
Yeah, exactly. And maybe being an asshole stresses you out yourself too. Because sometimes when you're dealing with someone that's so worked up and such a dick, you're like, oh man, you must be having a really rough day if you have to live in that energy all the time.
Yeah. So what are some of the, like from this past year, year and a half, almost 2 years, what are some of the things that you learned about yourself when you had the time to really take a break and figure out kind of how things were going in your career?
Oh, I think the main thing that I learned was that I really actually needed this time off. And I mean, I kind of knew that already, because before COVID, I was already on a bit of a break, and I had just spent 3 months traveling around Mexico with my partner, and I was already taking it pretty easy. And but then as soon as we came into lockdown, it's like, oh, I felt this huge relief of like, oh, okay, I don't have to do all these things anymore. And I realized I was pretty affected by FOMO, where I'm like, okay, I want to do all the trips and I want to go to all the festivals and see the shows. And I have all these books that I want to read and all these shows, TV shows I want to see and movies and theater shows. And I want to work out and I want to do yoga and I want to hang out with friends and I want to see my parents. And I felt completely overloaded with stuff that I wanted to do. Cause it's, you know, when you tour, you have to put all the other things on halt. So you have to, then when you come back from tour, put all the stuff back in the breaks between tours. And I don't know, I guess I just really enjoyed having that forced downtime, at least at the start, when you had no idea how long it was going to be. I'm like, oh, great, I can just relax, take a bath, because no one's doing anything. And I can just go for a walk and read a book today. And I won't be missing anything.
Yeah, FOMO, that was real. And honestly, like there were times recently where I was just kind of like, well, you know, like it would, you know, once you're vaccinated, like if you get COVID, like that would suck, but no one's expecting anything of you. So you could just like disappear off the face of the earth for 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. And like, that's kind of how it was right at the beginning, right? Because there, yeah, like that FOMO of like,
forcing yourself to stop while the world is still like doing its thing, especially when it comes to work too, right? Like, I mean, it's very real to be like afraid to like not take an opportunity or like not be like active in what, you know, in your industry and really step back. And like that thought of like how that's going to affect you, is that something that you were thinking of when during those 3 months?
Yeah. I mean, I'd already said no to a really big opportunity the year before, when Robin, who I've been working with since 2010, went out on tour again, and I was asked to tour manage. And I thought about it for a week and then I said no. And that was really hard because I love working with Robin. You know, she's incredible. She's so talented, but also such a wonderful person to work with. And, you know, I know everyone on the team, and it was just really a tough call for me, but it would have been too busy of a year, and I had to take it easy also for some stuff going on at home that, yeah, I didn't want to spend that whole year away from home. But it was tough. And they're, you know, they're still my friends. So from time to time, I'd get a call, like a video call from an after party when they were in the States. It was daytime in the Netherlands. I'd be like, Watcha, we miss you.
Oh, yeah. Saying no to Robin, was that something that was difficult for you to do? Or had you already worked through those feelings and things before? In the past, another experience when you had to say no?
No, actually, I don't think I've said no before. unless it was because I just wasn't available because I was already on another tour. Or if the money wasn't right, or if it wasn't work for any other reason. But this is the first time that I said no to a big campaign that I would have really loved to do, but I had to choose my mental health and my personal life first. I hadn't really worked through that before. It's not like I get offered big album campaigns every week. So I didn't really, I guess I hadn't really processed it before. And it was really difficult. Yeah.
Yeah. Really finding yourself in a place where like, you know, you get that FOMO, right? And then and you're like, but you're really weighing, is it worth it for me?
Exactly. Because I saw the dates and I was like, oh, Madison Square Garden.
Take me through the emotions that you felt when you made the decision.
Well, I was mostly sad, just mourning my mourning my capability of handling everything I wanted to, but at the same time happy that I had so much going on in my personal life that I had a reason to stay home.
Having a reason, right? And sometimes that reason can be other people that you care about, but that can also just be yourself, right? Like finally giving yourself the room to breathe.
Yeah.
As you've worked in the industry, are there some things that you found yourself having to deal with that you didn't expect and that, you know, really, really made an impact on you?
Well, as a tour manager, you deal with so many more things than just like the financials and the logistics of the tour. There's a lot of HR issues that just come up. And I think I find bullying on tour really difficult to deal with and quite surprising. And I haven't had it happen that much, not myself being bullied, but being a TM and seeing some of the crew bully other people in the crew or in the band. And I think I dealt with it as best I could at the time. But it's been a topic of conversation this last year and a half, just because I think mental health on tour has become much more of an active topic, and maybe because now we've all had the time to actually sit down and talk to each other. Makes me more aware of that it's a facet of touring that needs to be addressed.
Is that kind of what got you interested in exploring diversity and inclusion a little bit more?
Actually, no, but it kind of came together in the tour production group because there's a mental health working group on the TPG. I came on board there because the diversity working group asked me to talk about my experiences working on The Knife, where we had an all-female crew. And just from that talk, I stayed on board. They invited me to all the other sessions, and I was just a very active participant in all the talks because I found it really interesting. And I also found it really comforting to have this group of people that we could talk about touring a couple times a week. Something to hold on to while we couldn't actually tour.
So The Knife was an all-female crew.
Yeah, in 2013 on the Shaking the Habitual tour, we set out with just a female crew where it was a six female crew, so LD, backline, front of house monitor, myself, maybe, and a production manager. And but it only really lasted the first tour because, well, I came on board a day before the tour started because the original tour manager had been let go. We soon found out that the crew had been put together just on the basis for being female, and not everyone was suitable for the positions they were hired to do. Not at the level that The Knife was touring. So we made a few changes, and we couldn't find, because it all had to be last minute, we couldn't find women available to fill the positions. And so they let go of the must be female quota, and it became more of a mixed gender. But they wanted to have at least a gender balanced crew.
Yeah, and that can be tough. I mean, in touring, women are the minority, right? So, you know, so you get a smaller pool to begin with. If you're already, the tour's already happening too, then you have an even smaller pool. So that there's a lot of challenges to that. What are some of the things that you learned would have helped when trying to include women in the tour without giving up on, you know, the quality of the hires?
Over time, especially in this last year and a half, I've learned so much about different initiatives and different resources and databases for not men on tour. And I don't know if that would have helped in that case, but because you can't just start hiring women and non-binary people and on your tour when they just haven't got the experience. So there needs to be a long process of encouraging women and non-binary people to pursue those careers, and then being given the opportunities to get the experience on the smaller tours, and then also being given the opportunities to promote and get hired onto bigger tours. It's not an overnight change.
Yeah, I completely agree. And actually, I mean, with all of the conversations that have been happening around mental health and, you know, really making these like big changes to the industry, like those aren't things that are going to happen overnight. I mean, So I love that makes sense. So something that makes sense to me, you know, if the pool of the possible people to bring on isn't big enough And those people aren't being given the opportunity to actually like gain that experience and be the best they can be. Mm-hmm. Then, you can't just like hire them onto these like big tours that, with big initiatives that care.
Exactly. But there's lots of stuff is happening, and especially what the project that jumped out at me was the 3T project in England. It was initiated by Native Management and their artists, Neo and Muramasa, who wanted to diversify their crew and found it really hard to find women or people of color, so especially women of color, whereas Neo, their artist, is a woman of color. And so during Corona, and they in turn were inspired by the Black Lives Matter movement to then set up a tour tech course, and they put a call out for Black women to learn more about being just an all-round tour tech, whether it's audio, lights, backline, anything. And within 48 hours, they had 600 women apply for this program. And they only had 10 spots for the first year. And so they selected 10 women and they did 12 weeks of full weekends of training, learning about anything on and behind stage. And the 10 women that have graduated are now touring. I'm in touch with some of them, and I follow the project online, and they're all just doing great. They've been hired on tours. And so it's just 10 women, but it gives off a great signal. And when they came on the tour production group diversity call, I was inspired to also start doing something, because I thought, oh, it's been great talking about this all year, but let's do a thing.
That is so cool. Yeah. And it's interesting. It's like, because you get the argument that like, well, there just aren't enough people. It's like, okay, but actually let's put the word out. Like, part of the problem is that a lot of people don't even know this isn't a viable career.
Exactly. And they don't, if they don't see themselves represented, then they might think it's not for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And tell me about Backstage Pass and how you're working to improve diversity and inclusion in your community and the Dutch live music industry.
Right. So yeah. So inspired by the 3T project, I thought, okay, I'm going to do something like this. I felt like a 12-week course would be maybe a bit too big of a project for me to handle. So I came up with a little bit of a different version, but basically we go in a little bit earlier and we're aiming at women or girls of 15, 16 years old, right before they are going to choose their follow-up school after high school or profession after high school. And so to empower and inspire them, we're going to have kind of like an open day at music venues throughout the Netherlands, where we want to have women professionals talk about what they do and how to get there, basically. So we'll do a little tour through the venue where at front of house, an audio engineer is going to talk about what she does, how it affects the show, just a quick basic tour, maybe let everyone kind of slide some of the sliders on the console. And then the same with the lighting and the same with the stage manager. Maybe we'll have a backliner there or one of the promoters talk about how the process of booking a tour comes together or the show booking for that venue. And then in the Netherlands, there's quite a few vocational schools for audio, lights, or general stage professions. So we just want to hand over information about those schools in the area.
That's great. I love it. And I used to be a high school teacher. So like inspiring kids to like do things that are outside of, your traditional career paths. I love
it. Okay.
Yeah. I mean, you get a lot of kids who like, they're like, well, I don't want to be a doctor. And like, I don't want to be a teacher.
Right.
I don't want to be a lawyer. you know? So like, what else can I do? Like, especially when they love the arts. And, you know, one of my biggest things with the arts is that people, you get parents who maybe like have never had exposure to anybody who is successful in the arts. So they'll be like, okay, but like, what's going to be your real job?
Exactly. So it's also to show the parents that this is a viable job. It's a real career. And I think this maybe still a little bit of that bad image of the 70s and 80s of sex, drugs, and rock and roll, where that's, I mean, we all know backstage is just a bunch of us sitting around looking at our smartphones.
Right. It's not that glamorous, you guys. Like, people are actually working or just trying to take a break.
Exactly.
Oh, I love it. That's so cool. So what are some of the things that people in your circle that because I mean, through the tour production group, you guys have conversations all the time about things that are coming on. Are there some exciting things that people around are kind of talking about, conversations that are popping up in order to, you know, to bring diversity and inclusion and things in there into other parts of the world?
Absolutely. Well, there's some tangible results that came out of the tour production group. We have the mental health charter, which can be found on our website, that artists and management can sign up to, maybe look through it. Maybe not every aspect of it is for them, but it's just a guideline to be aware of how you can make improvements in your tour planning for mental health. And same with a green rider and a diversity rider, which makes it, I think everybody now has those things on their agenda, but maybe not know exactly what they can do. So that's one thing that the TPG aspired to assist with and make life on tour a little better for everybody in the future.
Yeah, and that's a really great place to start, right? Because a lot of people who want to do something about it, they just don't know where to start, right? Like if you give somebody a checklist, then maybe they can choose the things that are appropriate and then you can find help to get you there. But if you don't even know where to begin, that's a problem.
Exactly. And it could feel like such a huge mountain of things to do but you could start with just small changes and for all of those aspects. So yeah, it's been great being part of creating all that.
Yeah. So have you seen a good response from, because I know tours are starting to be planned for 2022 and 2023. Have you had some interest, like from people who are planning tours and things to actually do that? Like, or is it a lot of tour managers that are interested in kind of working it in, or are you getting agents or managers that are interested in working these things in?
I don't think we have insight in that. It's just on our website for download. So we just I don't know how many people are using it.
Not sure yet, right?
No.
But we'll find out.
I don't know exactly the numbers, but hundreds of people on the mailing list. So it's going out to lots of professionals, and we have also a good amount of paying members.
Well, and that's the thing, right? So a lot of times you'll put out a resource and you don't know immediately that it's working.
But yeah, then, exactly.
You know, like a year later, they're like, well, actually, you know, we use that resource and this is the great outcome that we had because of it. Thank you so much. And you're like, oh, wow.
Yeah, exactly. And also one of the things I did during COVID was in January, we started a clubhouse, a weekly clubhouse for women tour managers. And it was just a fun thing that I did with three other women tour managers. We did every week for maybe 3 months or so, for however long everyone was on Clubhouse at the time. But still now I get messages sometimes like, I followed you on the Clubhouse. It was such a great resource and really empowering to hear from women in the industry and how really it was pretty hands-on subjects that we tackled. So it's great to, hear that it actually made an impact on some people.
Yeah, Clubhouse was an interesting, I actually loved it. Like, I thought it was actually pretty cool at the time.
Yeah.
People aren't really using it a whole lot anymore, but there are still those weekly meetings from I know there's like a world touring like update. I don't know if they're still doing it because I turned off all my notifications on my phone because I don't want to be distracted. So yeah. I'm having a hard time keeping up. But it was actually really neat. There were a lot of conversations that were had. I know I was in some of the ones that you had. I was listening. But yeah, I mean, hearing from people like in real time about their like what they're feeling like now and then how you can, you know, build into the future and come back stronger and better.
Yeah, it was a really good platform for it. I stopped using it because after a few months we were done with the hosting. We just felt like it was just hard to keep making the time free. So and then I also wasn't really listening to anything else. And then now sometimes I'll take a look like what's even going on here anymore. And I feel like all the rooms that I'm seeing don't have any of the people that I follow in them, and it just becomes really messy and I don't even know how to find something that I might be interested in anymore. Or maybe there aren't and they're just putting random rooms in my feed. I don't know.
No, exactly. Like some of the conversations like started getting a little bit weird later on, lots of arguing and stuff. Mm. So that was interesting, but it was cool because it was like conversation time. But now I feel like people have taken all that conversation and now everybody's like in this mode of like, what are we actually going to do about it?
Yeah.
So that we don't come back and be like, oh yeah, we had all these beautiful conversations, but let's go back to status quo.
Yeah, well, yeah, exactly.
So what are some of the things that you're going to be prioritizing like in your personal life to make sure that you're still taking care of yourself so that you're not finding yourself in a place where you're like, I need to say no to everything because I'm burned out?
Good question. I'm pretty mindful of who I accept work with. And if they're going to be a new client, I definitely want to get to know them. I mean, I always did that and they would want to get to know me as well. But I think, yeah, I'll be better about guarding my calendar and not overbooking it. Saying that, I think I was already doing that, but once I said no to the Robin tour, I kind of maintained a regulated calendar, I think.
Yeah. Well, and you got confirmation that it was the right thing to do for you, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's hard now though, because after sitting still for so long and not making any money, now it's like, okay, great. Anything that has money coming in, great. I really need it. So bring it on. But so far it's not such an extreme amount of work that I need to guard my mental health.
Yeah, not yet, right?
Not yet, exactly.
Not yet. But it's funny because, you know, we'll sit here kind of being like, well, you know, it would be a good problem to have like so much that like you have to say no. But you know, it's important to remember that because I mean, I'm one who definitely trusts that things are going to be okay, and because things will be okay, we may fall into this place where it might be hard to say no. It might be hard because of just the pure excitement of it. It might be hard because of the money. It might be hard because of just being bored at your house and like really wanting to go somewhere. Right.
Exactly. And I mean, I still get so excited when I get offered a tour. I always have been. And I still get that same excitement when I get an email from someone that either I know or I don't know. And they're like, oh, we've got these dates. Are you available or interested? What's your rate? I'm like, it's just such a fun feeling.
I take it that it's really important to also have people who you can recommend for when you get those calls that like you're not going to be taking and things. Is that something that you recommend to people that you speak to that are green in the industry?
Yes, absolutely. Whenever I get offered a job that I cannot do, I will always recommend people for it because then at least I've been useful to whoever contacted me, and then they might contact me again next time, even though I didn't do the job myself. But I am very picky with who I recommend, because if they don't do a good job, then it'll reflect poorly on me.
Take me back to, you know, when you first started recommending people. How was that? Like, was it scary to recommend some people, or did you just kind of do it and then, you know, maybe regretted it?
Oh, that's a very, yeah, that's a very specific question. I'm trying to remember when I first did that, but I am sure it has backfired. And that made me more cautious to recommend people. I can't think of any concrete instances now.
But you clearly had the experience where, like, you are very mindful about how you go through that process, right?
Yes, absolutely. And I think, I don't think that I've ever recommended a tour manager that people said, oh, what, like, who was that? That was bad. But I would maybe have recommended, I don't know, merge vendor, like local sellers or drivers or something that were maybe a secondhand recommendation that you're trusting someone else to make a recommendation, and then you're forwarding it, and then it ended up not working out. Like, should have vetted better.
Yeah. And that makes sense because, you know, with certain people, like, you only have limited experience with them. Like, you only had that little bit of contact with them. So, and if, mm-hmm. and if it was positive, you're like, oh, sure. But those recommendations probably, although it was like a small amount of time that you interacted with them, and it maybe shouldn't be that big of a deal, it could cause a lot of trouble. So being mindful is important.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And the other way around, if you can make a recommendation and it could change someone's career, because they might end up, you know, doing a great job and being hired back again and again, and that artist might grow out to be really big, or you never know.
Yeah, that's exciting. And so tell me, how did you stay in touch with your tour family and all of the people that you've built relationships with over the years during COVID? Was it joining the TPG and things? But what about, like, the crew that you actually worked with and stuff? Did you guys keep in touch a lot?
We kept in touch a little bit. We have a little group of crew that we usually are on the same tours together. Because myself and the production manager I often work with, we get along so well with these crew people that we always pull them onto our tours. And we had a few Zoom calls. We did an escape game online together once. There wasn't really, I know some crews did quiz nights and stuff. It wasn't really that active. Maybe once every few months we all kept in touch, and I did a lot of one-on-one calls, just catching up with tour friends individually or via text or calls or Zoom calls. I did a lot of calling this whole last year and a half, either meeting new people but also a lot of keeping in touch with my existing contacts. You know, I'd never seen my travel agent face to face, and we've worked together for like 15 years, and we didn't know what each other looked like. And so we scheduled a video call, and it was so fun because we never, you just chat, because you're always just talking work and like, I need these flights and these hotels, and just emailing or calling. And we'd never video called before, and I'd never been to their office. So that was really fun.
Oh, that's so funny. Like, for 15 years and not actually, like, having ever really looked at them.
Yeah, exactly.
That's so cool. Well, it's funny because, you know, like, this whole podcast was kind of came from that. It was like, oh, you know, I have these friends and, like, they do cool things, but, like, I don't think I've ever taken the time to ask them anything about themselves. So it's nice, right? I feel like there was a lot of opportunity to really get to know each other.
Yeah, absolutely. And the crew that I do work with, we're pretty close. you know, off tour, because we've worked together for so long now. So we've been to each other's houses and we know each other's partner. So with that small inner circle of crew, we're pretty close. But yeah, exactly. A lot of people that you wouldn't really normally talk to about personal stuff. So it's been nice. And I think I've made a lot of new great contacts.
Yeah, it's really funny. Like, you know, talking with someone, I mean, you know, I talked to you a few months ago, like over camera, like over a Zoom call. And like, I've been doing that obviously with a lot of people, but like there's a tour manager that we were doing Spanish lessons like weekly, and I just met him in person.
Oh, like, great.
Like the other day at Riot Fest. Like, but we had been talking like multiple times a week. And he was on my show and the whole thing, but we had never met. And so I got kind of like really excited because like I saw him come up and I kind of did a double take and I was like, oh my God. And I just feel like those like experiences are just going to happen so much to everybody.
Absolutely. Yeah, that's true. Yeah. 2 weeks ago, I was at Reeperbahn Fest in Hamburg, which was my first outing out of the country. And I met up with Mara, who's a tour manager that I did the clubhouse with. And we met online during the pandemic. We never met face to face, but we sat down and we just started chatting, and we chatted for like 2 or 3 hours nonstop as if we'd always been friends. And it was super nice. So I can't wait to meet all these other people that I've gotten to know over the course of the last 2 years.
Yeah, I think it's going to make a lot of people really happy. Which is something that I hadn't really like thought of during the whole thing, you know, like, oh, I'm actually like I'm setting myself up for a lot of really fun moments in the future.
Yeah, that is so true.
Right. So everybody has something to look forward to, like every time there's a festival or anything like that, which is something that you guys already experience all the time, right? Like you meet people here and there, but like because there were more conversations happening, like over Zoom and like over Clubhouse and things like that, it's like there's a little bit of a deeper connection between everybody.
Yeah, and you have that shared experience. But it was, yeah, exactly, it was already like that when you're at festivals, you see and you just run into old tour friends. I always love that.
Oh, I love it so much. Well, we're almost out of time, so I wanted to ask, what's a piece of advice that somebody has given you or that you've acquired over the years that you would give to people who are trying to get into the industry, who are new and who want to be part of this diverse group of new people in the industry?
I would say when you make new contacts, keep in touch with them. Follow up every few months, because they're not going to remember that one call for a super long time. But when opportunities come up, they'll think of, they're not going to think back that long. So I say that to almost everyone that's reached out to me that I've, you know, taken the time and had a little conversation with, and hardly anybody does it. And I've spoken to so many aspiring tour professionals in the last year and a half. And now when I have opportunities, I'm like, who do I know in LA? And I can't think anymore. So you got to be fresh in people's memories. If you want to keep your network strong, then every maybe 3 to 4 months, reach out and be like, hey, just checking in. This is what I've been up to. If you have any opportunities, please keep me in mind. I think that would be super helpful.
Yeah, it can be scary to ask, right? Because you feel like you don't want to like bother people, but like, why did you talk in the first place?
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, don't be hesitant to reach out. If it's the right person to network with, be purposeful with who you reach out to, of course. But we're very approachable, and just send a message on LinkedIn or email, or and then do a quick introduction of yourself and explain why you want to meet with that person, show that you've done a little research. And then when you have that FaceTime, yeah, make sure that you make a lasting impression. And yeah, like I said, just follow up.
Well, thank you so much. Yeah, this was really great. It was great talking to you. It's awesome to see the great things that you're involved with. I mean, having those writers, like the diversity writer and the wellness one. I mean, that's something that I look to because that's my whole thing. Like I'm trying to bring wellness, to, you know?
Yeah. So
I think it's a great piece that is really important and you guys are doing a great job. And hopefully, you know, we can get more people to like join the pool so that we can get move on to a bigger, better, more inclusive community. So that's really exciting. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Absolutely. It was my pleasure. It was great talking to you, Janine. Help. Thank you for having me on the podcast.
Here are some key takeaways from my conversation with Lacha Horvers. 1. If you feel like you want to try something new, just do it at whatever level you're at. And although sometimes we learn by doing, other times we learn from amazing mentors who teach us the way. So don't be afraid to reach out and ask for a helping hand. 2. When others doubt you, it's easy to doubt yourself. Remember that with practice, commitment, and consistency, you will become more confident in your abilities. 3. It's okay to prioritize your mental health. It can be difficult to say no and to choose your well-being over your responsibilities or expectations of yourself. But it's important to get in tune with what your mind and body need before agreeing to take more on. Ask yourself, is it really worth it for me? 4. Diversity quotas may or may not work when prioritizing diversity and inclusion. In the end, the most qualified and capable should get the job, but that can't happen unless more diverse people get a seat at the table in the first place. And 5, be mindful of who you accept work from, as well as who you recommend when you can't say yes. In order to really show up as your best self, it's important to guard your calendar and to try not to overbook it. Thank you so much for joining us on the Tour Life podcast. Be sure to give Lacha a follow on Instagram at LachaTM. Download the TPG Mental Health Charter by visiting tourproductiongroup.co.uk. And don't forget to like, subscribe, leave a review on iTunes, and to follow The Tour Life on Instagram at The Tour Life Podcast.